Thank you for gathering today as a people called out from the world to be with God's people. I trust you have a great sense of anticipation in coming today. It's important. It's important that you are here. And maybe it's just good for us to recognize how important it is that we do the work of the church, which we've been doing, as we pray together, as we worship together, as we encourage one another. Great opportunities that God puts before us as we come together. So I'm glad that you're here. I trust you have also come with a sense of thankfulness for the privilege of meeting. It's also important because this weekly gathering helps our desires, our thirst for the kingdom, our thirst for our God, as we compete with the desires of this world that would have us be satisfied with things that are such more mundane. This regular meeting that we engage in is important for our own thirst for that which is much greater and higher. So I trust you'll find this to be a good time together and that you'll continue to commit yourself to supporting one another and being engaged here at Centerpoint. Thank you. If you've ever purchased your first house, or maybe that first nice new car, then you'll connect with this experience, or this statement about experience. That experience, perhaps like none other, creates this tangled set of emotions. Emotions that are, on the one hand, full of hope, and full of nervousness, on the other hand. I'll never forget the time when we purchased our first house. It was several years ago now, and we had just finished graduate school in the seminary and been married for 6 years, and we had spent 6 years in several small cracker box, my wife calls them quaint, apartments. They were small. And I was so looking forward to getting into a house with a little more room and a yard that I could take care of, and it would be wonderful. And now we were out of school and had a couple of jobs, and I was filled with hope for a house that would be a great blessing to us. And then there came that question, do you qualify? You know, it's the question that the mortgage banks ask you and interrogate you about. Do you qualify? And whether you're getting a house or a car, if you're financing something, they're going to overturn every element of your life to find out if you are qualified. What's your income? How long have you been in this job? Have you been paying your rent on time? How much debt do you have? How do you treat credit cards? And the list goes on, question after question. And all the while, the sense of concern mounts. And actually, they're pretty good at finding blemishes, finding those little marks that can be held against us, by which they can say, you don't qualify. I remember what it was like just buying a little house that in that day cost only about $80,000. The house I really wanted was about $8 million. I could never qualify for that. If the strain of qualifying for something we really want for here in this life is so great, how much more the sense of nervousness we feel when it comes to qualifying for the kingdom blessings, for that blessing from God we want so badly and we need so deeply, and we wonder, do I qualify? We may do lots of things to try to see if we actually qualify. We may check through our church attendance. You know, I'm pretty good at this. I come to church most Sundays, well, not all of them. And on some of the Sundays that I come, I really don't want to come, but I do come. Okay, I got a few blemishes there. Or how about prayer life? We could check through our prayer life. You might say, I pray one or two times a day. Not bad. Until you realize that God's standard is pray without ceasing. I got a few blemishes in my prayer life. How about the way I talk? I've really been working hard at no harsh words. I've kept my tongue from saying things that I didn't want to say. Well, most of the time. I did slip up just a little while ago. I guess I got a few blemishes there. And it doesn't take long for us to realize that as we add up the blemishes, we really don't have much hope that we qualify for God's blessings. Where is the hope? What hope is there for people who are covered with blemishes in terms of getting God's blessing? Where do we really have any sense of assurance and hope that we unclean people would receive kingdom blessings, the things that we really want most? Forgiveness, peace of mind, freedom from demonic oppression, a sense of being with our God. Those things that we really want most. How do we have a sense of hope that will ever qualify? This morning, we're going to discover a story about a woman who was completely unqualified, it seemed. A woman so filled with blemishes and uncleanness that she didn't have a hope in the world that she could ever receive kingdom blessings, or so it seemed. And then we'll find that indeed she did have a hope that surprised everyone around her. And her hope will become our hope. I think you'll be encouraged. But before we open the text and look at the scripture this morning, I want to just take a moment and make an observation about our desire to be qualified. And the observation is this: our external blemishes really do seem to disqualify us from kingdom blessings. Or let's broaden it. When I look around us in the world, I see people are so unclean, so imperfect. Certainly, they have little qualification for kingdom blessings. Think with me about the Muslims. How easy it is for us to look at those Muslims who are offering prayers to Allah, who dress in rather unusual ways, who many of whom have a quest to see Sharia law ruling in the nations. And we think, they have no hope. There is no hope for them to be qualified for kingdom blessings. Or maybe we would think of that person we know who has come out of the closet and has said, I'm a homosexual. I have desires for people of the same sex, and I'm going to pursue them unapologetically. And we think, oh, such a person could never be qualified to receive kingdom blessings. Or how about the people who just messed up their lives so badly? You know, it's the people you know that they got into drugs and their life really fell apart. Or they've been through divorce and adultery. Or they've spent all their money and they gambled it away and they've now become impoverished. And life has completely fallen apart. They have nothing admirable about them. And we might look at them and say, you know, not much hope that they'll ever really qualify for kingdom blessings. But closer to home, we might, if we're honest, say the same things about ourselves, that we also can be so affected by the blemishes of our lives that we have a sense of hopelessness to receive blessing. perhaps lured into a sin. Something like pornography that we don't want to do, but it keeps pulling us in, and with every click of the mouse, the blemishes increase. And we lose hope that we could ever receive kingdom blessings. Well, for some of us, it's the time we get busy and we miss our daily Bible reading and we try to get it back, but when we come back to the text, it seems cold and distant and we sense, I am not pleasing God. I have no hope of really receiving the blessings of the kingdom. Where is there hope for us? We find that hope in the story of a woman who came after Jesus. Matthew chapter 15. And we're going to see from this woman that she is so blemished, so unclean, that nobody expected her to have hope. And yet, she had it. Matthew chapter 15, we're going to start with verses 21 through 26. And I want you to see a Canaanite woman whose external blemishes were so bad that it seemed to disqualify her completely from the kingdom blessings. We'll read all verses 21 through 26. Leaving that place, Jesus is leaving Galilee, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to him, crying out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession." Jesus did not answer a word. So his disciples came to him and urged him, "Send her away, for she keeps crying out after us." And he answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." The woman came and knelt before him. "Lord, help me," she said. And he replied, "It is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs." Here is a woman who is so blemished, so unclean, that she seems to be disqualified from ever receiving kingdom blessings. The story begins with this statement that Jesus has left the region of Galilee. If you recall your geography of Israel, there's Jerusalem, and a little further north is the Galilean region. And he goes about 50 miles north of there to a region where a couple of towns are called Tyre and Sidon. It's on the edge of the Mediterranean Sea in contemporary Lebanon. And he goes up there to kind of withdraw from the conflict that he's been having with the Pharisees, as we read about a couple of weeks ago. And here comes this woman. Notice with me how she is blemished and unclean. The text says, first of all, that she is a Canaanite. Now, that's an odd word to use, a Canaanite. The reason it's so odd is because that word hadn't been used to describe people of this region for probably 1,000 years. That's a word from much earlier in the Old Testament. It's not a word that was contemporary with the people of Jesus. The people of that region in his day were actually called Phoenicians or Syrophoenicians. In fact, when Mark records this story, he calls this woman a Syrophoenician woman. Matthew says she's a Canaanite, which means what? She's cursed. She's cursed. Because you see, the Canaanites were the cursed descendants that occupied the land of Canaan before Israel got there. And the command of God to Israel back in the days of Moses and then Joshua as they entered the land was this: get rid of all the Canaanites. The Canaanites would be the enemies of God's people. They would be the idol worshipers. They would be the people who would not be friends with the people of Israelite. And Matthew says, very carefully. This woman is a Canaanite with all the negative emotions you can stir with it. In fact, he says a second time, and she came from this region, right, of Tyre and Sidon, where these little towns are. This would be like, how do I explain this? Okay, my ancestors from several generations back were Scandinavian, Swedish. Now, nobody ever really calls me Scandinavian. They might say I'm a Michigander, but never a Scandinavian. Unless they were trying to make a point, and maybe they don't like Scandinavians, so they might say, hey, that Vic Anderson, he's just another one of those Scandinavians. That's what Matthew's doing here. She is unacceptable, a Canaanite. There's another part of her blemish that comes out here, though. She's a woman. She's a woman. You see, as a woman, she would be considered someone who is more often unclean than clean. She would be a person because of giving childbirth, because of menstruation, because of her role even as a woman. She would not have the access to the inner worship and the temple as men would have. She's unacceptable. Third blemish, her daughter, a demon-possessed girl. This text surprises me because it says, my daughter is, the NIV has made it nice and smooth, suffering terribly from demon possession. I don't know that you could suffer not terribly. I mean, literally, it is, she's badly demon-possessed. Oh. So I don't know what that means, except that apparently this demon possession made her unlivable and probably a focus of a society that said there is something wrong with them. This family is tarnished, unclean, and has nothing to qualify them for blessings of the kingdom. But here she comes. Jesus, have mercy. Jesus, have mercy. And so we see her plight, that she's so disqualified. Notice how Jesus responds. First of all, in verse 23, it says, he did not answer. Can you see this scene? This woman following Jesus as he walks along, perhaps? And she's crying out in a loud voice, and everyone can hear him, hear her, and Jesus can hear her, and he says, walks the other way. Second part of her plight. The disciples say, Jesus, get rid of this woman. Send her away. Dismiss her. And I don't think they're saying dismiss her with your blessing. I think that what they're saying is, this person isn't qualified to come to you. Send her off. She doesn't have much hope. And then she's disqualified, and that is personified by the fact that she is a Gentile. She doesn't fit the primary mission of Jesus. What does Jesus say? I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. This woman's not of Israel. She's a Canaanite. She didn't have much hope. And her plight then comes to this sad climax when Jesus says to her, it's inappropriate to divert kingdom blessings from Israel to you. It's not good. It's not right. Did you see it? It's there in verse 26 with this stinging, offensive comment. It's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs. Jesus compares this situation with this woman begging for help to a situation where a table has been spread by a master of a house, and he's got his children, his family around the table, and they're sharing bread together, and a dog or two perhaps comes into the house and is under the table, and he says, you just don't take the bread that's intended for children and give it to the dogs. may have even been a proverbial statement. Now, how would the woman respond to this kind of statement? You'd think she might go off in a huff and say, all right, I'm not qualified. I won't get any blessings. There's no place for me. But what she says rocks the house, and it turns everything with one statement. Notice what she says in verse 27. Yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table. Huh? Yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table. What the woman is saying is essentially that her hope as one of the dogs under the table is that the mercy of God, the blessings of God, the mercy of God would be so boundless that it would run off the table for her benefit. That she would participate in the mercy of God that extended beyond Israel. For you see what Jesus has said to her when he says, it's not right to take the children's bed and toss it to the dogs. That's a metaphor, it's a figure of speech for the idea that you can't take the mercy intended for Israel, the children. You can't take the blessings that were coming to them, the mercy that's supposed to be extended to them, and give it to Gentiles who are unclean. And she says, Lord, there's so much mercy that Israel can't use it all. It'll fall off the table, and I get to eat it. She understands something that no one else in the story seems to understand, that indeed the mercy of Jesus, the King, is boundless. Did you notice her attitude? This is not a woman with any sense of entitlement, right? She doesn't come and say, don't you understand who I am? You owe it to me. No, none of that. He compares her to a dog under a table. And she says, yes, and even as a dog, may I take this place. I don't deserve to be at the table. But I'll take from the bounty that's left over. What humility. But this woman demonstrates in her humility a faith that mercy abounds. She can be included, not after the meal. This is kind of a fascinating little twist here. She doesn't say, well, after the meal is over, let me come and get the scraps. She comes during the meal. Even as Israel is being blessed by her king, may I participate in the blessings. You see, I don't think she's pleading for an exception. You may have heard that before in this text, where people would look at this and say, well, Jesus really doesn't want to help this Canaanite woman because he's come for Israel, but he makes an exception in this case. I don't think so. I don't think he's making an exception to his program. I think she's the one who really gets what the program is. Because the program of God has always been that from the time of the covenant with Abraham, that God would bless Israel. Why? So that Israel would be a channel of blessing to the nations. And the way that Israel was to be a channel of blessing to the nations was that the nations would come to Israel, right? They would come to Israel, and they would come to the temple, and they would worship their king, worship their God. And here comes this woman, a Canaanite. And she comes as a foreigner, unclean, unqualified, and she gets it. That as Jesus is giving mercy to Israel, as God has designed from the beginning, that mercy extends to her and the nations abundantly. You know, the disciples didn't get it. Send her away. The disciples don't get it with the crowds in the two passages on either side of this. When Jesus feeds the 5,000, send them away. He's going to say the same thing almost in the next chapter about feeding the 4,000. Send them away. We can't take care of them. Jesus says, no. They come to me for mercy. The Pharisees came in the previous passage. You may remember it from a couple of weeks ago, back up there in the earlier part of this, in verse 1, where you have that Jesus is in Galilee, and the Pharisees come out of Jerusalem. Why? To accuse him. And now here comes this woman. She came out of Canaan to be blessed by him. She gets it. The Pharisees didn't get it. The disciples didn't get it. She got it. Kingdom blessings are not sourced in the external. Kingdom blessings are not sourced in the external. They come from the mercy of God to those who have faith. Jesus says her faith is great, and he grants her request. Verse 28. So it reads this way. Jesus answered, "Woman, you," and by the way, I don't think that's a woman. This is, "Oh, woman, you have great faith." What makes it so great is she understands, she gets what no one else seems to get, that the mercy of the King is so abundant. "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted." And her daughter was healed from that very hour. You must understand that this is not, the idea here is not that her faith caused her healing. The faith didn't cause the exorcism. What brought the healing? It's the mercy of the King. He's the source of the healing. And he commends her faith, commends it as admirable, by healing her daughter. It's how he proves his point. The woman's hope is in this boundless mercy of King Jesus. And it's amazing how it impacts her and everyone around her. I think she believes. Certainly, Matthew is trying to indicate for us that his readers are to believe this concept deeply, that external uncleanness is overcome by the boundless mercy of King Jesus. What about us? It would also be true for us, wouldn't it? Where is our hope when we do not qualify because of our external behavior, because of our external person, because of everything that we are outside of us? We do not qualify for kingdom blessings. Where is our hope? It's here, in the boundless mercy of our King. Have hope. To be included in kingdom blessings, have hope in the boundless mercy of King Jesus. That's a hope that extends toward others, toward those Muslims. The people that you look at and you go, they don't qualify for kingdom blessings. Our hope is that mercy will abound to them and their lives will be changed. To the coworker or friend or relative who's come out of the closet and says, "I am homosexual," and we might think they can't get the kingdom blessings. No. Our hope for them is in the mercy of King Jesus that will extend to them and their lives will be changed. and for those in our family, in our offices, in our neighborhoods who have messed up life completely, and they're drug addicts or they're divorcees who have completely lost contact with any sense of a normal life, or they have lost their jobs and they're living on food stamps and they're living on welfare, and life has completely come apart, and we might be tempted to look at them and say there is no hope for them. My friends, our hope is in the boundless mercy of King Jesus, that he can meet them. And there will be days in our own lives when we check our credit worthiness and we say, you know, I got a lot of blemishes here. Where's your hope when behavior doesn't measure up? When you tried to resist the porn and couldn't do it? When you tried to say good words but bad words came out? Our hope is not in cleaning ourselves up. It's in the mercy of King Jesus. I'd love to have that $8 million house, but I'll never qualify. But suppose I found a lender who kind of looked at my qualifications and then said, you know what? I'm not looking at your qualifications. The house is yours. Man, if I could find a lender like that, I'd do business with him. Our King is not a lender. He's a giver. A giver of mercy that never runs out. Mercy that has come through Israel, but extends to all of us. Not because of our externals, but because of his mercy and a faith that we have in it. And so, our Father, I ask that we might have the faith of this woman, a trust in you and your generosity through the King. Forgive us when we think that we can somehow earn the blessings of the kingdom. We cannot. Father, for my friends here who do not have a relationship with the King, I pray earnestly for them. Lord, I ask that on this day they would quit striving to have a set of credentials that would qualify them, and that they would run to Jesus for his mercy. And I pray for those of us who know the King, but keep trying to build a portfolio to make our credit score look good. Father, forgive us, and may we rely like never before on the boundless mercy of King Jesus. For Jesus' sake, amen.